This is John Williams. Here comes your weekly mincing by the Rascals of WGN Radio and the Chicago Tribune. Today with special guest Mark Baser. Another podcast for you to search for is The Interview Show with Mark Baser. And one quick note about this podcast. We just won the Illinois Broadcasters Association Award for Best Podcast in the state of Illinois. Whoop, whoop. On this podcast, another FBI raid on a member of the Chicago City Council. Are you keeping score? We are. After first admitting him, Harvard denies admission to a Parkland shooting survivor. And yeah, we go to Trump land again. We're really glad that you include us in your podcast day. Thank you for that. We react today to a letter from one of our listeners and would love to hear from you, too. Write to John Williams at WGNradio.com or just listen to this. Today is Thursday. It's June 20th, 2019. It's 11:17 in the morning. Let's hustle. I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
Who are you?
I'm Mark Baser. I'm the host of The Interview Show on WTTW.
I'm Eric Zorn, the sepulchral columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
What does that mean?
Sepulchral means relating to a tomb or interment, gloomy or dismal. It relates to two columns I wrote recently about human composting after death and dementia.
He wants you to be buried into the soil and become one with the world, right?
Yes, I think that would be a wonderful idea.
And also you said go to the age you are, when you were 10, that is, what year was that? Look up the top 10 songs of that year. It's amazing how those will resonate with you now, and especially later in your life as you fade into various forms of dementia. I did that, by the way. And I thought, well, what are the top 10 songs of 1969 for me? And I don't relate to music when I'm 10, but when you're 10, those songs actually are around till you're 16, right? And it was, I love those songs. What a great playlist.
Did you have awesome. Older brothers or sisters?
I had an older sister and two younger.
So you had that music in the house, too. I had three older brothers, and so that music would resonate.
Did you find there were things on it? Like, on my list from 1969 would be things like the Sugar Sugar by the Archies, something a song that I would sort of disavow today.
It's not on my iPad. I looked at that and was disappointed in my age group for championing
that song
at that time.
But you were 10, you know?
I know. I wasn't a decider, and I wasn't even paying attention to music at 10, but by 12 I was, and Sugar Sugar was still getting radio play.
Sugar.
The Tribune, by the way, just since we're not starting with the first thing I wanted to start with, has a new logo. What do you guys hear? New web page,
new web design.
Yeah. I don't like it, but nobody likes anything new.
No.
So I think in time I'll get used to it.
I think it's going to be great. For a user, for someone who posts stuff to it, it allows me now, I don't have to distort my cartoons. I'm not sure if you ever noticed online, they look different. They're narrower and it kind of distorts the art. So for all of us
who are editorial cartoonists for the Chicago Tribune,
yes.
This is great.
Well,
I wonder how it impacts other people.
Well,
Scott.
Does it matter?
Well, also for the writers, it's a better system. But the I'm like John, I'm a little averse to change, but I think that it is a cleaner look and a little easier to use. I don't know, Mark, you're a.
I like it. I'm not affiliated with the Tribune, and I except for as a reader, and I thought, like you said, it's cleaner.
Yeah,
I think it looks generic. It looks like all the other websites.
You won't even remember the old one in 2 weeks.
I don't remember it now. Well, this is a big deal, I think. Maybe not, but I'll bet it is. Kerry Austin, the second longest serving member of the Chicago City Council, had her office raided by the FBI this week. The longest serving member of that pre-jail club, you may recall, Ed Burke, is also being investigated by the FBI. No one has said...
Not investigated. He's been charged now.
Even worse, he's been charged. No one has said why they're looking at Kerry Austin, at least not that I've read. Do we know exactly what the potential charges are?
Greg Hines, a Crane Chicago Business, wrote a column quoting insiders that he didn't name, of course, that this has to do with campaign finance. Her use of her campaign funds for illicit purposes.
She was very close to Danny Solis,
who was the guy who wore a wire for 2.5 years.
And so when, on Ed Burke, among others, say, and so when that was revealed, she was really sad. And they asked her about that and said, what do you think about Solis wearing a wire on Burke? And she said, if I talk about it, I might cry. And they said, why? And she said, because you just don't do that. meaning tell the truth to investigators about somebody who may be committing a crime?
Exactly, especially yourself.
You guys say what you want about Lori Lightfoot, but I think her cynicism about that body is warranted.
We don't know enough to say with the Austin case, but think about this for a moment. 30 aldermen since 1972 have gone to jail.
Yes.
We have Alderman Cochran of the 20th, who just got convicted and awaits sentencing. We have Burke, who's under indictment, Solis, and Austin. So, you know, how fast are we going to get to 40? I think you're absolutely right. Mayor Lightfoot, looking at this council, I think any thinking person who looks at this has got to be aghast.
When Mayor Lightfoot was a candidate, she, during her interview with the Tribune, she alluded to the fact that she expected more aldermen to fall, more indictments to come, and she has her connections to the U.S. Attorney's Office, so I would not discount her projections on that. The feds don't go and raid somebody's office based on an odd little tip or, you know, not a lot of information. They have a very good track record in Illinois of rooting out corruption and
winning.
Well, not rooting it all out, I should say, but certainly identifying corrupt politicians and prosecuting them. I would not expect this to end with a never mind, Alderman Austin, sorry, we took your computers and here they are and we'll never bother you again. Just a prediction.
Well, I think her relationship with Mayor Lightfoot, while perhaps immaterial, is interesting. She didn't support her. She supported Preckwinkle. She was in charge of what, the budgetary committee? And Lightfoot stripped her of that and gave her maybe something, just a title and name. And she said something like, I don't want that. It just seems like a pansy. She used the word pansy.
She was in a pansy committee.
Yeah. She seems like a piece of work. And
she seems entitled. I mean, and I only mean that for anybody who's had a job too long.
Oh,
and then
no.
You think you get to make the rules.
She employs her family, her two sons, one of which was involved in an accident and then lied about it.
And she sees nothing wrong with it.
With a city vehicle.
And then she lied about it and continues to. These aren't good people.
She inherited her office, I think, in 1994 from her husband, Lemuel Austin.
And what's his great quote?
Oh, boy, he got me.
Pigs get slaughtered, hogs get fed.
Was that awesome?
It's him.
It was beavers, but anyway.
In other words, we are going to do what you think we might do. Yeah, we're going to do it. And so then there's Lori Lightfoot, who I just love her smirk. I love her. She's like, I'm tired of this crap, and I don't care. I mean, she served notice to Ed Burke on the very first meeting of the city council that she chaired. Ultimately, you'd like to say something needs to be done about it. I don't know what's going to be done about it. These people keep getting reelected. Term limits for council people? How about that?
Well, why does she get reelected? She must be doing... I get that there's a long-established machine, but she was definitely supported the mayor, Mayor Daley and Emanuel, but she must be doing something for her community.
I bet all of the corrupt politicians, especially the corrupt politicians, are very good at constituent services, right? I mean, you can steal from the city or contractors, just make sure the garbage gets picked up on time and that lot gets mowed and stuff like
funny.
That.
Somebody came that day, right, to say, hey, this lot hasn't been mown. They're like, sorry, the office is being raided. Can you come back tomorrow?
I know the timing on that was bad, but that's my guess.
So you think Lightfoot is getting a bad rap for being criticized for her trips to Washington and New York and being on Colbert?
I was shocked by that. Were you? I mean, there was Kristen McQuarrie in your paper. Was it Lynn Sweet or Fran Spielman in the Sun-Times?
It was Fran.
Lynn wrote
a column then. Lynn Sweet wrote a column in the Sun-Times basically trying to throw cold water on Fran's column. It's an interesting dynamic.
I am surprised that people care that our mayor is in New York for a few days. I don't think she's hobnobbing. She's speaking to a National Democratic Committee, and she's appearing on Colbert.
Don't we want that? Don't we want our city to be on the national stage?
The word they used was jet setter, and I don't need her to be a national spokesperson for LGBTQ or anything. I just want her to fix our stuff.
Well, she's a little awkward spot because she did criticize one of the white shirts, the deputy superintendent, for having a vacation in Aruba in early June. And, of course, the violent season in Chicago runs from Memorial Day to Labor Day, basically. And she had decreed that no one should take a vacation in that time on the police department. So it sounds a little awkward, a little weird to say, well, I can go to New York. But she's actually not on vacation. She's there. I know she's doing Colbert and she's doing some fundraising. But she's also meeting with Michael Bloomberg. She's meeting with people on Wall Street. She's doing the kind of things that you do need a mayor to do. It's not like she's in Aruba. It's not a total vacation. I would give her a pass on this if I were writing a column on it, which I'd not, actually.
I think for,
as it turns out.
I think, but for now.
Just dawned on you, maybe you should.
This early in her administration, you can give her a pass. I mean, Rahm was all over the world. He didn't.
He was.
You know, he didn't.
Absolutely he was.
Care about
the And by
city.
The way, Mayor Daley got the idea for Millennium Park when he was in Europe. I mean, what is the harm in Lori Lightfoot spending a few nights in New York? I don't understand that at all.
Well, you can't reach her when she's in New York. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, yes, you can. Yes, you can.
You can.
She's seeing the show Chicago.
This seems a little odd, but let's just do it. 18-year-old Kyle Kashuv. Is that how you pronounce his name? Kashuv. Survived the Parkland, Florida high school shooting that killed 17 students, but he did not survive the admissions process to Harvard. First admitted, the conservative Second Amendment advocate's application was later denied after his racist language was revealed by a fellow student. It was in a study document that several students were simultaneously working on, and he used severe racial words and phrases. Harvard says it's about the maturity of its students, not their politics, that can get them denied. He says the words don't reflect his views, and he's grown since then. Mark Baser, what is a Harvard to do?
Did he say those words or write those words?
He wrote those words.
So they are his words.
The N-word like 15 times in a row, plus he wrote in the voice of a dumb black person.
You know, I went back and forth on this for about 10 seconds. I don't know, who cares? You didn't get into Harvard. So did most people. Get out of here. Who cares? Seriously. I mean, I understand that people deserve second, third, fourth, fifth chances in life. Absolutely. This kid is going to get a second chance in life regardless of whether he goes to Harvard or not. Like, he's going to go somewhere. He's going to do something. He has plenty of opportunity as he goes forward to make amends for his ways. I think I've read this in, I think it was Slate. When you apply to a school, what they judge you on, and I know he got in initially, what they judge you on is not what you're going to do in the future, although they might look to that, is what you've done in the past. And this is what he did. They don't want him. Get out of here. See ya.
Does it matter to you that it wasn't published? It was a private study document where he said he was copying an attitude to make a point. We can't know what this kid was like at the age of 16. There's disagreement among his peers. He wasn't writing editorials in the school newspaper.
Yeah, but anything, whenever you apply and they look at your past and they look at anything they can, and most people aren't published authors, right? They're looking at what your background is. Look, I understand that he may have changed in that year and a half. My guess is he's still a little, I don't know what you can say on this podcast, but I'll say jerk. I don't want to know. I don't know what the language requirements are.
I can edit it out. What are you thinking?
Well, he's probably just a little asshole. I mean, that's what he seems like. So why would Harvard want him? They now see the truth. It's revealed to them. Get out of here.
Mm. I was struck by his decision to go so public with this because
he was on Fox News.
Well, he posted to Twitter the letter that he wrote to Harvard, this abject letter that he wrote to Harvard explaining that he had changed. And this happened before the shooting at Parkland, by the way. And he said that shooting changed him. It made him grow up. And it was a fairly persuasive letter in terms of, like, yeah, I this was horrible. I reject this. This isn't me anymore. And then he shared Harvard's letter saying, you know, one letter from the Office of Diversity at Harvard said, yeah, it's okay. We understand, you know, fine with us. The admissions office saying no. Anyway, but what he's doing, he turned this into a national story. I don't know if he's done interviews on Fox, but he certainly, his name is out there. Anyone who Googles his name from now on, that's the first thing that's going to pop up is all these stories about this. That struck me as a poor strategic move because Harvard is not going to rescind this decision. They're not going to change in the face of pressure from Fox News to let this guy in. So he's going to go to a fine college somewhere at some point. He's going to be fine, as Mark points out. You know, not getting into Harvard is not the worst thing that's ever happened to anybody. It did strike me as a very odd decision on his part. And if I were Harvard, I might have taken this into account and, like, put him on some kind of a probationary thing, because I have some sympathy with people who say that when you're 16, you do and say stupid stuff. And it's just consistent with my view that we need to show some leniency to people who are 16 for the stupid things, even the criminal things that they do. Our justice system recognizes this to some extent, although we're increasingly trying young people at 16 as adults for crimes they commit when their brains are not fully formed. They do stupid things. I don't know whether this guy has sincerely changed. His letter was was pretty good.
Which letter?
The letter that he wrote to Harvard explaining
his application was good too. His application essay was really good.
Well, and clearly his grades were good enough to get in. Going to Harvard, not going to Harvard, not going to Harvard's a big deal. Going to Harvard helps your life, it helps your career. This is a big deal for this kid. And for them to rescind something, I mean, you said we're not all published authors. Well, and at my age, no, it's true. When I was 16, there's nothing exists. You know, the puffy mullet is, all evidence is gone now.
What I wouldn't give. If anybody out there, arizona@gmail.com, you have Scott Sandus photos from high school.
With a puffy mullet.
But he was 16 years old, and you do stupid-ass things when you're 16 years old. You say stupid things. And now, in this digital age,
I think we're inflating the consequences.
Did you say anything like that when you were 16? My guess is no.
No. No.
No. And did you write it in a shared document with other people? Would you have shared it with somebody?
No. Would you ever have dreamt of saying the N-word as a 16-year-old?
Oh, gosh. No. No.
Right.
Especially in a digital age, where even if you did whisper to a friend or write it on a piece of paper when you and I were in school, these kids do know what a digital footprint means. They know that this is traceable. If nothing else, it speaks to the stupidity of the kid. I don't know his heart. But you guys, I'm with Mark on this. He's being denied admission to a club. That's the end of it. Nobody's saying he can't work. He'll be fine for this. I don't want to be Harvard these days.
They knocked out, 10 or 12 kids just recently for Facebook postings that had racist memes and stuff. So they're serious about this. They're serious about keeping people out. But those were more contemporaneous. When he's 16, he's a sophomore in high school.
He's 18 now. So his contention is that I've changed in the last 18 months or 2 years. And to coin a phrase, he may still be an asshole. He still may be a person who harbors those feelings. And if you're going to judge him by that, I don't know that in 2 years that's suddenly gone away.
So he should have just said, okay, they didn't let me in. I'll apply to Princeton or Yale.
Harvard, their acceptance rate, I know it just keeps going down and down as more people apply. They probably take, 8% of the applicants? It might be less, it might be more, but it's not much. There's another person that they could accept who's probably not much different in terms of grades or scores than this kid, except for this other kid that they now may accept didn't do this. It's not like there's nobody else who can fill this kid's shoes in the student body that's qualified.
But here's what I like about him. Here's the sort of diversity he represents. He said, having survived that, I'm an advocate for the Second Amendment. I think it took a certain courage of his convictions to say the things he was saying. If I were Harvard and that landed on my desk and this didn't happen, I would have admitted him. I thought the strength of his essay and his scores evidently were good enough to put him in that school. I think that would have been a feather in everybody's cap. We haven't talked about the president yet, and we should spend some time going to Trump land.
It's like there's a horse loose in a hospital.
Yeah, let's not go to war. Let's start there.
All right, so I don't know whose fault our relationship with Iran is right now, but I do know that Iran shot down a U.S. drone in the last 24 hours. I guess a measured response would be we shoot down one of their drones.
Well, here's the thing. What if an Iranian drone were over Chicago? We'd shoot it down. It's an Iranian drone
Iran. I don't know that this is over Iran.
That's where the question is right now.
I think it's over the ocean, and the question is whether there are actually international waters there in the Straits.
Because it's so narrow, it may not exist.
It is provocative if we have a drone that's up there monitoring them.
So what do we do about that?
Can't really rewind the tape, but I think getting out of the Iranian nuclear deal, which Trump thinks was a great idea, may prove to have been not such a great idea.
And now he's screaming that they're not following the agreement. It's like, good Lord, man.
That's been lost in a lot of the conversation about that. At least until recently, they continued to adhere to the agreement that we pulled out of.
But we weren't the only parties to it. I mean, it was Iran and a bunch of other nations, so yeah.
Their motives weren't pure. I mean, they saw that as a lever between us and other nations that we're allied with, but they at least were adherent to it for a while. But then the people in the administration say, well, it was a bad policy. This is Obama's fault. I don't even know what we're doing here.
It doesn't end well.
Do we have a Secretary of Defense at the moment?
We do not.
It makes me fear that John Bolton is exercising a tremendous amount of power at the moment, and he seems hungry for that kind of battle.
Yeah, we're suddenly on the knife's edge here, before we pulled out of the Iranian nuclear deal, it looked like they were still maintaining some capacity, but things seem to be somewhat under control. That wasn't a flashpoint, and now suddenly it is. Would anyone around the table, if you had sons, I've got a 22-year-old son, would I want to have him drafted? Not that we have a draft, but would I offer him up to fight that war over in Iran? The answer is no.
Oh, would you be happy to see your son, one of the thousand or daughter troops that are also being sent over there for whatever? None of us know exactly what to do in this situation. I want a president who I think will know or will be able to navigate that. You know, a cool, calm, collected thinker who's smart and has good people around him. The president was just asked about this morning. Will we retaliate with an airstrike? And he said, we'll soon find out. You know, it's just,
fire and fury, right? Isn't that what he said for North Korea?
I just have no confidence that he's the guy to navigate something like
this. Why not,
this.
John? Why don't you have confidence that he's the right guy?
What did you guys think of his 2020 campaign launch speech?
It's impressive. Over 20,000 people packed into that arena. I'm telling you something. The Democrats have a tall bar to cross, because every Trumpian, and I know it's 30-35% of the American population, but I swear to God, every one of them are going to vote. I just spent a week with my in-laws, who I love, but they watched Fox News 29 hours a day. They love this guy. They're going to vote, and these people are going to vote.
What does your wife say about that?
Is
it hard for her?
She's the nicest person on the planet, and she's actually gotten into arguments with her mom. So it's
if my parents were like that. I don't mean to speak ill of your family. That would be very difficult for me to spend time with them.
I start to debate, and then I just stand up and walk out of the room. It's hard.
Well, how much fun is that?
Do they bring it up? Because that's the thing. I can stay away from politics, but if people provoke me by bringing it up, then I find myself just in a wrangle all the time. So I like it when people don't.
Well, I stopped wrangling. I just kind of go to my happy place.
So you talk about SEC football?
War Eagle, you know.
Roll Tide, whatever you guys
War
say.
War Eagle.
So back to the president's speech.
John, you asked about the speech, about what I thought it was kind of boring by Trump standards. He didn't advance the ball at all.
Does he know he's not running against Hillary, by the way?
This is basically the same speech he was giving three years ago, right? He's like going after Hillary Clinton and fretting about Democrats wanting to destroy the country and immigrants.
Crooked Hillary Clinton and the DNC. It was all an illegal attempt to overturn the results of the election, spy on our campaign, which is what they did, and subvert our democracy. Remember the insurance policy, just in case Hillary Clinton lost. Remember the insurance policy.
There's nothing new here, and he's just...
His big three targets are the witch hunt, Hillary, and the media.
You know, I said, this is a very big arena for a Tuesday night. I said, you know, if we have about three or four empty seats, the fake news will say headlines. He didn't fill up the arena, you know.
That works. But but I was surprised at how unique that speech wasn't. I don't think it was a smart campaign launch speech.
This sounds very shallow, but I really do not like the man. But I do find him oddly often funny, and not in a way that I like. If you made a movie and there was a President Trump and he was saying those lines, you would laugh because it was satire, and there's some. Like, he has some comic ability somehow. But I didn't see any of that in that speech. And he seemed to have, I mean, who knows? He could get it back next time.
Give me an example of something he says that in the movie you would make you laugh.
I can't think of a specific example, but it's just kind of the way his timing is good. He has good comic timing in these speeches. Like, and again, I'm not agreeing with what he says. I think they're ridiculous. But I can see why people... are entertained.
His adherents laugh.
I can see why people are like, this is an entertaining speech I'm watching. This one, people apparently were leaving because maybe it went on too long. Maybe they had been bussed in from other parts of Florida.
It was a long program too.
But it didn't. It
the vice president.
I agree with you guys. Like the speech it didn't offer anything new. Maybe that's enough. I am greatly fearful that he will win in 2020, but. I think he needs to be funnier.
He's going back to immigration. He's going back to the media. He's failed.
They chanted "Lock her up" for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. An example of his showman ability was when he talked about he had their slogan "Make America Great Again," And then there's also a slogan, Keep America Great. And he asked the audience for their input. They were going to do by cheers. And he did this thing like, let's hear cheers for Make America Great Again. And then let's hear cheers for Keep America Great. And then he's decided that Keep America Great had won. And he, but you could see in the arena that they had already established Keep America Great was the new slogan, because you can see it in the signs around the arena. So it was like, it was just P.T. Barnum, you know, it was a show.
But if it's the same things that he was saying when he ran the first time, doesn't his saying those things the second time, like we're going to get the wall built, we're going to keep the immigrants out, means the immigrants are still coming in and the wall isn't built?
We're draining the swamp. The swamp's defrayed. We're draining the swamp. He's hired more lobbyists and cronies for the administration. Washington is swampier than it's ever been. He just says what's not true, and his followers, Scott's beloved in-laws, eat it up. They believe what he says. He says he's going to build, he's 400 miles of wall is going to be built, and there's just no way 400 miles of new wall is going to be built. I think there's going to be 256 miles. Some of it's going to be...
Well, that was the New York Times fact-checking that, and they said 142 miles of that don't exist. The 258 or whatever it is that have been built, most of that is repairing existing wall. They labeled that an exaggeration, right? But it doesn't matter.
It won't matter. Those people will vote. The same people who voted for him in 2016, and on the Democratic side, 5 million fewer voters than in 2012. That's a significant number. So if you think, and hate is not enough to motivate people to the polls.
So is Joe Biden the guy you want running against Trump?
Mary Schmeek, who doesn't normally jump into these waters, said this week, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Tribune, said that it's going to be Elizabeth Warren. She said it'll be Warren or Biden, and if I had to pick one, this wasn't necessarily her choice, although she likes Elizabeth Warren, but she thinks Elizabeth Warren's going to be the Democratic nominee. What do you think?
Who do I think is going to be the nominee? Probably that guy Yang, probably. Who knows?
Mayor Pete was on TV this week on Sunday morning, and he is so good. I don't know if he has the credentials, but he's so measured.
Oh, wait, who's in the White House?
Yeah, right.
Credentials?
You know, come on. I find myself liking most of them. I really do.
Yeah,
More or less. I like Warren. I liked Bennett, who nobody's paying attention to, from Colorado. Everything he says is good. I like Mayor Pete. Biden is getting, Biden's week has gotten more interesting
week
by the day, as he really is being beat up, and rightfully so in some ways, by the left, especially on social media. But he's still, like, if you talk to my dad, who's a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat,
Biden's,
he likes
guy.
Biden. Yeah. Yeah.
And your dad's of a certain age that votes, too. Maybe more older Democrats are likely to vote for Biden, show up for Biden, than they are Kamala Harris or Mayor Pete.
Certainly what the polling would show is that Biden's doing. Biden seems to be out-polling Trump and everybody else.
Fox News did polls last week. I mean, these polls are 6 days old, and they had all of those Democrats beating Trump. And Biden beating him by the most.
One thing I think is interesting about Biden, and I wonder if he's in some way consciously or unconsciously following the Trump playbook in doubling down on not apologizing for things that may be mistakes. I mean, maybe that's the lesson that he thinks he's learned.
Explain what you're talking about. This thing where he talks about how well he worked with these segregationist senators, and that this is what this is all about, what we're talking about right now.
That's right.
Go ahead.
He was saying that he did not like these times as much as when he was coming up in the Senate, and he was referring to it as, I believe, a time of civility, and that people from opposite ends of the aisle could work together. And he, for some inexplicable reason, chose two very segregationist colleagues to bring up as people that he had worked with.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting debate that's going on right now, is in general, as to how much you can work with people you disagree with. And to what level can you disagree with? And for many people today, the idea of working with somebody who is just an abject segregationist doesn't fly. And he's saying, but we got things done, and you have to work within the system. And that's what I did. And yet he worked with many other people who were on the opposite ends of the island.
I mean, he chose those examples for exactly the reason that everyone is so mad about it, because he picked the worst people he could think of. And
that's,
I worked
right.
with these terrible people, and everyone's saying, look, he's cozying up to
he
the worst
coddling,
people.
He was talking, he worked with them. And frankly, the way you change hearts and minds is not to browbeat them and scream them down, but you engage them, and you, over time...
See, I think Biden's whole approach these days has been this kind of accommodation is kumbaya, we can work together. And it strikes me as naive and not of this political moment, but it's what we would like to believe.
Yeah.
That a lot of us would like to believe that Democrats and Republicans of goodwill can get together and say, okay, we disagree on X, Y, and Z.
Well, you are of that ilk. You're the one
I am like that in some ways. I feel like you have to realize that people you disagree with often come from a reasonable point of view, not the segregationists. I wouldn't count them, but I would say that you have people with whom you have profound disagreements that they have to learn to work together. And what Biden is saying is very appealing, because a lot of candidates do this. They talk about, I'm going to be a uniter. Who's a George W. Bush was, I'm going to be a uniter. And people want a uniter.
Nick Harkin wrote us and said he's a big fan of the podcast. He listens every week. He thinks we totally missed the boat on last week's discussion about disco demolition. He said, I'm not saying everyone who participated or has nostalgia for that event, disco demolition, the blowing up of disco records 40 years ago this summer, I'm not saying all those people are racist homophobes. When Fred Astaire danced in blackface or Mickey Rooney played Mr. Yunoshi in Breakfast at Tiffany's, they surely did not realize they would be seen as offensive in the future. He said, but it's wrong for us to, through the filter today, celebrate that. Like, okay, Steve Dahl, you didn't know this was going to look bad down the road, but the White Sox and the rest of us should not look so fondly on it today because, he said, it was homophobic and racist. If that were to happen now, it would be seen as such, says Nick.
I know a Nick Harkin. I know a Nick Harkin.
Maybe this is the Nick Harkin you
know. If it is, he's a great guy.
Seems to be.
And a listener, too. But I was kind of expressing that view. I want to say, Nick.
Well, you did. I disagreed. I thought, when I was in college in 79, I had a sign in my office at the college newspaper that said, help wipe out disco in our lifetime. Because I hated the music.
I didn't mean it that way, but
and
today...
you're not going to Harvard either, man.
But if you did that today, that would be seen as more than just an opinion about music. Nick, thank you for listening. Eric, thanks for coming by. Scott Stanis. Mark Baser doesn't always get to join the Mincing Rascals. We're glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
We're produced by LF Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio. We'll be right back.